Hello and welcome to another episode of Dez and Marco.
I'm Dez.
And I'm Marco. Hello, Dez.
Hello, Marco.
Wow, great intro. First things first, let's start with our beer of the week. What are you drinking?
I'm going to try embellish this, and I have really no right to. I was just doing my weekly shop in Lidl, nothing fancy. They had like a craft brewer festival, and there was a couple of beers brewed exclusively for Lidl, just for like this event.
Okay.
And I make it sound like it's like farmer's market, craft beer festival. No, it's just in a bog standard Lidl. They made some brews specifically for Lidl for this, let's say, week. And I thought I'd give it a go just because these are craft breweries, but they've obviously done a short-term partnership with Lidl to promote their craft beer range. So this is from the Salt Beer Factory. You know, breweries aren't cool anymore. It's a beer factory.
Of course.
They're based in Yorkshire, England, and it's a very simple casual pale. That's the name of it. And as you'd expect, it's a pale ale. And what are you drinking?
So I was actually going to drink another beer that I bought at the supermarket. And then when I sent you the picture of it, you told me you had already reviewed it like months ago.
Yeah.
So I scrambled, I ran to the fridge and found the first beer that we haven't reviewed. And it's by the Dutch brewery Brouwerij Tai, which I think I've reviewed almost like a bunch of beers. It's the one that's a windmill.
Yeah.
And this is one that they've made also in collaboration, like yours, in collaboration with a club here in Amsterdam called Waterkant. So it's meant to be drunk while you sit there and watch the boats go by because it's on a canal. And it is a tropical lager, and it's called Biri.
Nice.
So, cheers.
Cheers.
So, starting off with the news, Tears of the Kingdom is finally out. Reviews are amazing.
Whoa. For those who are uninitiated, Tears of the Kingdom is the Zelda sequel, which we've spoken about before, and a lot of the world has been waiting with anticipation because it's 6 years since the Zelda Breath of the Wild, which was kind of one of the launch games on the Switch, which is now a six-year-old console and widely regarded as one of the best in the Zelda series and possibly one of the best games of all time. So huge shoes to fill in. And as Marco said, it was finally released.
To great reviews. Yeah, it's fine. Like, so one thing I found pretty interesting, I think I texted you about it the other day, is the fact that they announced the title of Tears of the Kingdom when the Queen of England died.
Yeah.
And then they launched it when Charles became king or was coronated king. So it's actually quite interesting to see Nintendo play with that. I mean, or Nintendo have maybe a hand in, or they played a role.
Conspiracy theories.
Exactly. Can I blow your mind? But anyway, the reviews are really good. I haven't played it yet because I pre-ordered it on Amazon, and then the day before it was supposed to be delivered, or the same day actually, they emailed me saying, oh, sorry, we're suffering some delays, so we'll tell you when we'll send it. And then they never did, so I just bought it from another place, which also took a couple of days to deliver. And then I was actually really busy this week. So yeah, I one thing led to another. I haven't played it yet. So we're going to make a really quick episode so that I can go play it immediately after this. Anyway, I know you have it, but then we'll talk about it in a future episode.
And that is the end of this episode. Now we can go play.
Yes, thank you, everyone. Goodbye. Secondly, so NASA has selected, you know, we're very big fans of the Artemis program, which is meant to be the program that returns astronauts to the moon after decades that we haven't been. They had already chosen their partner to build the lander, which is SpaceX, who will have a modified version of their Starship that will be specific for landing on the moon. But now they've selected a second partner, which is Blue Origin. So the space agency, or not, I don't know, the rocket builders or whatever they're called, from Jeff Bezos. So we have like two of the richest men on Earth participating with our doing business with NASA. So they're going to use a modified version of their Blue Origin capsule. And it's expected to be launched or it's expected to be used in the Artemis 5 mission. And as a recap, we're currently at Artemis 1 that we've successfully completed. And the next one is going to be Artemis 2, obviously, which is going to basically just take astronauts and go around the moon without landing and return them safely to the Earth.
Cool. And obviously a project that we're following. Just a follow on from the last episode, we still haven't heard back from the Japanese moon rover. Just putting it out there.
Oh, really? Okay. So if you've heard from the Japanese lander, please let us know.
Yes. Leave a message in the comments.
Yeah, exactly. Also, recently, we had the Google I.O., which is Google's yearly keynote where they present some new products, but as well as new products as well as new functionalities that they're about to show. And this year, it didn't disappoint. So first off, we had the Pixel 7a, which is the cheaper version of the Google Pixel, which is actually pretty good. I mean, it's pretty much the same hardware as a Pixel 7, no?
Pretty much. It's that's the thing. It's remarkably similar to the Pixel 7, which in itself was a pretty cheap flagship compared to flagships nowadays. Like, it was well below the $1,000 pound euro new kind of threshold for flagships. Yeah. It retails for $599, the Pixel 7. So that's kind of in upper mid-range territory as is, I mean, in today's market. And as you said, the Pixel 7a is undercutting it a little bit, but there aren't huge differences in specs.
No, which actually raises the question. I mean, the Pixel 7, you can find it discounted. And I think there's only like $100 euro pound difference between the two. Why would you get the cheaper one? If you find the more expensive one on sale and they're at the same price, why would you get the lower end one?
I think that's what their selling point is going to be. And features which are usually taken away from premium phones to justify the mid-range label are things like wireless charging. But the Pixel 7a has kept that. Another thing they've cut corners on, and I don't really mean that in a negative sense. It's more of a, this is where they've saved some money, but not actually, you know, sacrificed on the product. And the 7 and the 7 Pro have got Gorilla Glass backs, and they have a unibody chassis, whereas the Pixel 7a has a smooth plastic back. And instead of having a unibody chassis, the now, let's say, famous, I don't know how you call it, like band where they keep the camera modules and stuff.
Yeah, like the RoboCop visor.
The RoboCop visor is actually an added-on component. So, you know, there is a line there because it's bolted. But you don't. I personally think these are perfectly fair trade-offs. No one's actually going to care. And my phone is in a case 99.9% of the time. So would I care if mine had a plastic back? Not really. Do I care if it was a unibody construction or not? Not really. But one area where I think Google has done its research and has kind of, let's say, notched down the performance a little bit is the cameras. So they're not as good as on the Pixel 7 and Pixel 7 Pro in terms of actual hardware. But considering the AI magic that it does with its pictures, it still does very good pictures compared to all other mid-range phones. But if you want to have a better or, let's say, the best camera experience that you can get on a Pixel device, you need to opt for the better 7 series.
Okay. So, yeah. I think that will be a really good phone because it's like around $400 or $500. I think it's going to be a really good phone once you find it on sale.
Yeah, definitely.
Like, and I'm pretty sure you will.
Yeah, you will find it on sale. It'll be curious to see if the Pixel 7 will drop, because it has been in sales as it is to a price which is currently lower than the Pixel 7a. So will they lower the price to that level again now that they've got a cheaper product? I don't know.
Yeah. But more importantly, Google announced the Pixel Fold, which is their first foldable. And there aren't many out there. And I mean, it's currently foldables is Samsung land. So they announced a foldable that folds like a book.
Yep.
So instead of like a flip phone, but it's a slightly different form factor compared to the Fold 4. So Samsung's foldable. in that it is a bit wider and shorter instead of being like thin and tall.
Yeah.
Overall, it opens up to a more like landscape mode, but it looks amazing. And it's got now Android is supporting for foldables just for this phone or starting from this phone. And yeah, it looks great.
It does look great. And I think they've made some excellent or very interesting engineering choices. So the comparisons with the Fold 4 are inevitable, whereas Samsung has opted for a thin and narrow form factor, which opens up into a tall and thin sort of tablet sort of thing. Their screen doesn't fold flat against each other, so there's always a little bit of a gap when it's folded. Yeah. And on top of that, the screen has much less of a bezel, which means they've put the front-facing camera, so to speak, with a little cutout.
Yeah.
A hole punch. Whereas the Fold has opted to have slightly wider bezels, which I don't really mind because you need to hold the device. So a bit of bezel is actually good.
Yeah. Yeah. On a tablet. Yeah.
Yeah. And they've hit the cameras there. So there's no hole punch in the screen, but there is a larger bezel. And a lot of people are quite divided on this because you have the, I don't care if there's a bezel camp, but they could have maybe been a bit smaller. And you have also people saying, oh, you know, that bezel is just way too big. I think once you get used to it, you probably won't care. My personal opinion.
Yeah. Only sore note is the price. I think it's like $1,800 or euro. And well, for me, the sore note is that it's going to be initially released in 4 countries, which are Germany, Japan, UK, and US. So I won't be able to buy it. So not that I'm kind of tempted right now, but I don't know. Like, you know, our rule is to never buy the first generation of anything.
Agreed. They don't have that good pre-order offers either. And I bought the Pixel 7 because the pre-order offers were insanely good. They gave me so much money towards my old phone, which was like on the floor catching dust. It was ridiculous. They gave me the Pixel Buds Pro, which are excellent as a freebie. And then the phone itself, to begin with, was of a very decent price. I was hoping for a similar level of, let's say, incentive. And the only thing that you do get is the Pixel Watch as a freebie. And then they just give you a pretty good price if you've got a Pixel device, but not exceptional. We were spoiled previously, so this is actually a pretty good offer, maybe, if you really want it. But even trading in the best of everything you could imagine, you're not going to drop down below 1,300, whatever your local currency is.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And nobody really wants a Pixel Watch. It's the best watch Android has made, but they're still not that good.
Is it though? Because I mean, the Samsung watches are heavily skinned, but they're arguably better.
Okay, sorry. Yeah, but that's what I mean. The Android watches in general, the Samsung ones are better. The Pixel Watch is a step in the right direction, but not there yet. So
yeah, yeah, yeah. It's nowhere near an Apple Watch to compare. One other thing that maybe that, well, reviewers or people that did a hands-on are curious about is the battery life. So it uses the same processor as the Pixel 7 and 7 Pro.
Yeah.
But it has a slightly smaller battery compared to the 7 Pro and two massive screens to power.
Yeah.
So, and the 7 Pro, from what I understand, doesn't have stellar battery life. So that could be a question mark.
My understanding is that the outer screen is actually smaller than any other Pixel device. So maybe if the tablet mode, I say, is used sparingly, the battery life might be fine, but it's definitely a question mark.
Yeah, exactly. One thing I found pretty interesting, and then we'll move on to the next topic, is that Samsung has already started advertising against it. I got an ad, I think on YouTube or online, or I can't remember where they were basically like advertising their Fold 4. The message was, why get the first generation of something if there's a fourth generation of something else available? Shots fired.
Yeah, I think that's a fair point. It's it's a mature product. The only thing I would say is that we complained about this last time, is that the Fold 4 has played it so safe compared to the Fold 3. The basic design is unchanged. They took zero risks. This is basically introducing competition, especially in the market outside of China. For example, in the US, the only foldables on sale right now are the Samsung Flip, the Samsung Fold series, and now the Pixel. So only two brands are competing in the foldable space in the US. The market is a little bit more competitive in Europe, but not greatly so. And then the Chinese market is essentially out of bounds to the rest of the world.
Yeah, exactly. Although I think in the US there's also Motorola. But yeah, it's not. It's really not. If you're a consumer and you want the foldable, there's not a lot of choice. But anyway, finally, they showed more details about the Pixel tablet. Like the name says, it's a tablet made by Google. It's actually pretty interesting. So unlike the iPad, Apple is trying to make the iPad into a computer and with mixed results. Google is just plainly admitting, you know what? It's a tablet. You're not going to take it around, or you're not going to take it to like school or on or with you all the time or whatever. You're just going to keep it at home. So they built a really cool dock on it that turns it essentially into their Nest products.
Yeah.
Like their smart screens.
The Google Hub.
Yeah. Basically what it does, it's a dock that charges it and it functions as a speaker. You know, and then it has functionalities like multiple users, home controls. It's essentially designed to be used at home, which is what Google claims everyone uses a tablet for. And as a tablet user myself, I would agree.
I think it's a very interesting direction to take because, as you said, the tablet market is pretty much dominated by Apple. Android tablets, including the Pixel tablet, are not that exciting. And everyone has said in its tablet format, so to speak, it's fine. There's nothing special about it. It doesn't do anything better than anybody else. Doesn't do anything worse either. It's decent. Even in terms of specs, it's again powered by the Tensor G2, the same chip in the Pixel 7 series and the Galaxy, and the Pixel Fold. The Hub is a game changer because if you were to buy like Google Hub on its own, it's half the price of the new tablet, which gives you the dock for free. So it's going to also encourage people to maybe get into sort of the Hub universe a bit to compete with Alexa devices. And the idea of having it charging but still functional with a very good speaker at the bottom where you can then use it for your music, maybe buy a music subscription of some sort or something else, use it to control your smart devices, but also have the freedom to take it off and maybe go to another room and dock it somewhere else. So you can buy the dock separately as well. So you could theoretically...
Yeah, you can buy multiple.
Yeah, you could theoretically dock it around several rooms in the house and change its purpose depending where you are. So it's an interesting device. I suspect most people are going to not do anything that smart with it, except for maybe a few enthusiasts. But it's an interesting direction to take, and it does differentiate it from every other slab out there.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, in fairness, it's not like there's many out there, but yeah, it goes a completely different direction than Apple, for example. Like Apple dreams of you taking your iPad everywhere with you and then using it as a computer and things like that, while Google is perfectly fine saying, you know what, you're going to use this at home to watch Netflix. We're cool with that.
Okay, now we can enter the review section of our podcast, which is also maybe the main, because we wanted to talk about these Pixel devices, which are quite interesting. Google has been obviously hard at work. But now it's time to relax, kick back, and maybe play a game or two on our smartphone. And have you played anything recently, Marco?
You know very well that I have. So, and also because you've played it as well, till your eyes bled.
Yeah, I neglected work for a few days. I hate to admit this. I don't know how I didn't get into trouble.
Yeah, so the game is called Retro Goal, and it's by New Star Games, which you may remember from New Star Soccer, which was a highly addictive soccer or football game released ages ago for like smartphones. And the whole point of that was it was kind of like an RPG-ish game.
Yeah, like a sim, maybe like a simulator.
Yeah, but you controlled one player, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah, you were the player, and so you had to train and get better, and then you'd be traded to better teams, and then you would end up winning all the World Cups and such. This is essentially the same, but you control a team. So you're the manager of a team, and you start like in a lower division of Italy, Spain, England, and so on. You train your team, you buy players, you sell players, you improve your stadium. So it's essentially a management game, But the mechanic there is that you get to play little portions of the game itself.
Yeah.
So you control the players. And one thing I really loved about this is the controls are really good.
Yeah.
Like for a mobile game, like how you control the players, how you make them dribble and shoot and pass. It's actually very intuitive and very good, like very reliable. Like, but the game itself is just like really silly and you, but it, the way it drags you in and you get, you essentially submit your life to it for a few days.
It's super addictive. It's charming. It has very stylized 8-bit graphics, as you would imagine the old timey retro, hence the name, football games used to have. It's got very intuitive controls. The game lengths aren't too taxing and you have snippets of actions throughout. So you always have that just one more go, just one more go, just one more go. And you end up having, you know, like 40 years have passed. You've got 3 kids and you have no idea what's happened.
And there's little challenges like you that you can do. So make 30 passes in one match or score 5 goals in one match or finish a season scoring 100 goals or win a championship with 3 different teams and so on. So it keeps itself fresh for about a week.
Yeah.
And then you've done everything and you're beating every team like 6-7-0 and and you're done. But like for that week, you're just completely into the game.
One thing which I found very refreshing about the developers and the game itself is that it does not push any microtransactions and there's no ads. There is one, let's say, screen at the beginning of each season which asks you if you are enjoying the game to consider buying the to unlock the extra features which are like weather and other settings such as like the length of the games and this, that, and the other. But other than that, there's no adverts and there's no predatory microtransactions. It just says, this is the game. If you enjoy it, please consider buying it to unlock all the features. But nothing's behind a paywall and there isn't that infamous difficulty curve where if you don't pay, you can't proceed.
Yeah, that's true. For a mobile game, that's great. And there's no ads. Like,
no.
It's just you get into it. And I was honestly tempted to buy the full version just to like just as a thank you for doing such a cool game. But speaking of cool games, we also wanted to talk about a couple of movies that came out recently on streaming platforms, and they're linked by the fact that the main star is not necessarily a person, but it's a thing, a product.
Yeah, it's a product.
And the first one is the Tetris movie.
Yeah.
Which is on Apple TV?
Apple TV Plus, correct.
On Apple TV, which is the story of how Tetris, which was a video game developed in the USSR, made it to the West or made its way to the West.
Yeah, because we kind of take it for granted growing up in a world where anybody can set up intellectual property, develop games, it belongs to you, you can market it, you own all the rights, you can choose what rights to sell, etc., etc. But in the Soviet Union, there was no personal possession. Everything belonged to the state. So this game was developed by a developer in his spare time, and they had no precedent on how to monetize this. And they couldn't even ethically monetize it because the Soviet Union was against that. It was seen as capitalist depravity to try sell something. The game did get out via a very convoluted manner with some British entrepreneur who used to go to Hungary, which is kind of like a gray area when it comes to communism and the West, because it was kind of like in between both. And he would buy software from Eastern European and Soviet, let's say, sources. And then he would just like cash cow, quickly port them to like Western the things and make a quick buck. And he came across Tetris and then he tried to sell it in various markets, but he didn't really own the rights and the permissions that he had was a little bit vague. And then enter, what's the name of the character? Hank something.
Hank Rogers.
Hank Rogers, who is a dual national American, Dutch and Japanese individual. So he's married to a Japanese girl, but he is of Dutch and American descent and he was living in Japan. And he had a fairly successful RPG game and he was doing some work here and there. And he came across Tetris at a game fair and he fell in love. So he wanted to buy the rights for Japan, And then the whole story unfolds. The story is crazier than fiction. It's actually a miracle this thing even came out to the West in the way that it did. And it ties in with perhaps one of gaming's and tech's biggest events, which was the creation of the Game Boy.
Yeah. And if you remember, the original Game Boy came out with Tetris.
Yeah. So many monumental things happened around this piece of software behind the Iron Curtain. And it's an incredibly interesting story. And I personally think that the Tetris movie did a pretty good job. And having watched an excellent documentary, which I recommend, called The Story About Tetris from Video Game Historian on YouTube, the film didn't stray too far away from the truth. And it did have the blessing of the real life protagonists. So I thought it was an entertaining movie. I definitely thought it was fun.
Yeah, it was pretty good. I mean, it's not that long. And it tells a very interesting, true story of how software makes it out of the USSR and what people do to get the rights. So it was quite interesting. So I would recommend it, definitely. But then there was also another movie about a product that you've seen recently.
Yeah.
That it's on Amazon Prime.
It is on Amazon Prime. I was actually surprised to see this on Prime. It had a limited, I think, theatrical release. And the movie is called Air. It talks about the creation of the Nike Air shoe, specifically around Air Jordans. The whole film is about, at the time, a not so big athletics company, Nike, which was trying to essentially gain traction in the budding basketball sneaker industry. And Nike was known for making running shoes. At the time, you've got Converse and Adidas, which are the big players in the basketball sneaker industry. And there are lots of interviews out there with Jordan where he openly admits that Converse had offered him the best deal, but he wanted to go with Adidas because they made the best sneaker. But it was his meeting with Nike which changed everything and, as you know, went on to create history. It's an interesting movie because, first of all, I thought it was hilarious that Amazon makes a movie where Nike is the underdog.
Yeah, I mean, yeah.
But in terms of production value, it was pretty high. It's got Ben Affleck, who plays Phil Knight, the CEO of Nike.
Yeah, the founder as well.
Yeah. I apologize in advance. Matt Damon. Sorry, have to. Who plays a guy called Sonny Vaccaro, who worked for Nike. He was tasked with finding the players to sponsor with Nike products. And he had a limited budget. And he had to find, let's say, the next people to wear Nike shoes. It's got other very famous actors like Chris Tucker, which I haven't seen in ages.
Yeah, he hasn't been in anything relevant.
No, so I was actually really happy to see him. He's grown a bit, you know, he's no longer that crazy guy from The Fifth Element.
Yeah.
So that was quite cool. And Jason Bateman, who, you know, famous for Ozark, Arrested Development, and lots of other movies. Yeah, so it's got a really good cast. And interestingly, even though it's about Air Jordans, you never see Jordan.
Oh, okay.
So you do see him once, but he never speaks. And this was...
Is it like it's an actor playing...
Yeah, it's an actor playing Jordan.
Okay.
But they were like, Jordan was so recognizable, even in his early days, to the general audience, that they couldn't find an actor to make it believable. So they decided to go in a different direction and make it about the story around Jordan.
Okay.
So you do see his parents because they were involved in the dealings. But you never actually like see or hear from Jordan.
Okay, interesting. Okay, but it was because they couldn't portray him
accurately. Yeah, so, but it was a creative decision that they took. So you always see him from like behind in a couple of scenes because obviously he's at the key pitch meeting.
Yeah.
But like you never see his face. But I did think it was hilarious because you know how Prime has that really cool feature where you can see the actors in any given scene?
Yes.
Yeah, and they even have the actor for Jordan, but you never see his face.
Okay. Okay. But it's because of that. Because I remember, or actually, do you remember, in the 90s, when Jordan was the biggest thing ever, he was never in any video games. Like,
no.
He never gave his rights, like, in NBA Jam, or, like, there was no... Like, everybody wanted to play as the Bulls, but then once... They discovered that Jordan wasn't there. No one wanted to play as the Bulls.
No, true. He was very maybe conservative with his image, but I think he was savvy, and I think he wanted in everything, he wanted a piece of the pie. And Midway, the developers of NBA Jam, were not willing to give that, so they weren't successful. Yeah.
Overall, would you recommend the movie? Is it good?
I think it is a good movie. I have no idea how true to life it is.
Yeah, okay.
I think maybe they tried to make heroes out of like a corporate boardroom. And there's only so much excitement they could put into this story. But I did think it's an interesting story, and it was interesting to see how the NBA shoe market was back in the 80s and how it is now. And this was the beginning of how it all changed. Because at the time, there was no endorsement of a particular player. It was like, you know, Larry Bird wears Converse. That's it. And the Converse shoe was the same for every athlete. Whereas the Air Jordan was a product built around the player, which was unheard of then. And there was other things as well, which this kicked off, because it was unheard of that a player got percentages of the sales. It was unheard of that, you know, a player wore a shoe which wasn't white, which was in the NBA regulations.
Yeah, he got fined a lot.
He got fined every single match, but Nike covered that.
Yeah.
So there was a lot of things which kind of this changed. And I think an element of the movie, which maybe they kind of make it look as if it was a given, but no one knew Jordan was going to become so big. It's easy to say in retrospect, but when he was like a rookie, no one knew. And they took that gamble.
Yeah, I mean, he was good, but you never know.
No, you never. He wasn't the top pick in the draft.
Yeah, no, he wasn't.
No, it was Hakeem Olajuwon.
Well, I mean, who also wasn't the
best? He was great. And that was a ridiculously good year. And you will appreciate this. That 1984 NBA draft, there was John Stockton. There was Scottie Pippen. There was Charles Barkley. There was Hakeem Olajuwon, you know. And these are all names which are huge in the NBA world. And they were all talking about these guys in the meeting because, you know, and it was just kind of cool to see that world because they actually joke about John Stockton being 16th in the pick. Like, who wants to pick him? And he was phenomenal.
Yeah, exactly. Like, he led along with Karl Malone, he led the Utah Jazz to two consecutive NBA finals and lost to Jordan, of course.
And lost to Jordan. I think these are two very safe recommendations. Not Oscar-winning material, but they're both entertaining, you'll learn something from both of them. So I personally think very worthy recommendations.
Yeah, and interesting to see movies about things rather than stories of people. I mean, ultimately, they are stories of people, but it's interesting that the protagonist is like a shoe or a video game now. So I think that brings us to the end of this episode, Des.
Agreed.
How is your casual beer?
You know what? It's a pale ale and it's fine. Tastes like as you'd expect a pale ale to taste. It's crisp, it's refreshing. It literally does what it says on the tin. It's not particularly complex in terms of flavors, but it's nice. I would rather drink this than a Heineken. And from that point of view, I think mission accomplished. They've created a good line of beers to just pick up and drink. I'd heartily recommend this as a casual drink when you're picking it up from the supermarket. If you see it on the shelves in Lidl, pick it up. And yeah, I'd give it a solid 4 out of 6 pack.
Oh, we're back to solid scores.
This is a solid recommendation. How about you?
Yeah, so I had the Biri beer, which is a tropical lager, and it's actually very good. I can picture myself being in that club in that bar that they developed it with. And just seeing, like, just having, like, sitting down, just seeing boats pass by on the canal. And it's pretty light, but it's tasty. It's kind of like, there's like a hint of fruitiness. I can see myself having a few of these at like a barbecue or just sitting along a canal. So I'm going to give it a 4.5 out of 6. Actually, no, scratch that, 5.
Whoa, that's a bold recommendation.
It is, but it's nice. Or maybe because today is a sunny day, and so I've been enjoying the outside. But it's worth it.
Fantastic. So 2 good beer recommendations as well. Love it. All right, guys. So quick summary. We spoke about NASA's selection of Blue Origin, the company fronted by Jeff Bezos, as its second partner for the Artemis moon landing project. And we spoke about the very interesting devices which Google has unveiled at its I.O., including the Pixel 7a, the Pixel Fold, and the Pixel Tablet, which are three devices which are much more interesting than you would initially think. We went on to recommend Retro Goal, which is a silly but stupidly addictive football simulator slash RPG available on pretty much any mobile device. And we gave two very good recommendations on movies which are actually focused on a product. And these are the Tetris movie, which is available on Apple TV Plus, and the Air movie, which is available on Amazon Prime, which talk about the Tetris game and the Air Jordans respectively. And hopefully next week we will also talk about the other news, which is Tears of the Kingdom, the latest Zelda game, which Marco is yet to play.
Having said that, Des, I'm gonna go play now. So thank you all for listening, and Des, I'll speak to you next time.
See you next time, guys.
Matt Damon.